Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hi.
Welcome. Hi there.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. I'm Mike Sweeney.
I'm Jesse Gaskell.
And we're writers on The Conan Show, and welcome to Inside Conan, where we talk about behind the scenes of Conan.
And through the years, through the decades.
Yes.
What a storied career.
It really is historic. And today, we're starting with someone who started on the show in 1998.
Yeah.
And worked 5 years on the show.
And he's one of our more famous alums.
He is. John Glazer. J-O-N, not J-O-H-N.
Yes. He wanted us to tell you that.
Exactly. Please do not misspell his name. A very funny guy and a very, he always has his own
really
unique.
Really good performer.
Great performer and a very unique, his own point of view for comedy.
Yeah.
That is part of everything he does. It's unmistakable. Mm-hmm. And we're excited to have him here.
Yeah. And I think he's excited to be here.
Oh, my God.
Even if he doesn't sound it.
For John, he is through the roof excited.
So it's a long interview, so we can shut up now.
You are going to be quiet. And here's John.
Here's John.
You want to make sure you hit your target.
Yeah.
No glancing blows.
There should be a podcast. Maybe I'll just copyright it right now, called Burning Bridges.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
You just go on and you just cut loose.
I love it.
And you wonder if the person's going to listen to
yes.
it or not.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those exist, but you have to run into them accidentally.
Right.
But to have
it I would be in listen one to place.
That would be very, yeah. Bridge burners.
It might only be a season of it, but that's enough.
I don't know. I don't think so. You'd have enough people who are like, fuck it.
Right. And then the spinoff would be Bridge Burner Apologies.
Bridge Builders.
Right, exactly, where they try and
bridge repairers.
Where you say, I was in a bad place.
Right.
I need to come clean. Yeah.
It's not.
And then you get the follow-up. You know what? Fuck it.
Yeah. No. I was right the first time.
Yeah.
It's called doubling down on Bridge Burner.
And I hope they've been rolling on this.
Man. No, this is just right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's introduce our guest.
He's smart. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. That's when people say the stuff that they really mean is at the very beginning.
Exactly. That's why we've been recording you since you started making tea outside in the other room.
Great.
We're pretty much done.
Good.
Welcome to the podcast, John Glazer.
Thanks. Yes. Hello, John. It's great to see you again.
This is great to see you as well.
Old friend.
Yeah.
Yes.
How long has it been since you two saw each other last?
Yeah, well, we had... A year ago? Hmm. You were
maybe
in town?
A year ago.
And we had dinner.
Oh, right.
Somewhere.
That was last October.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like I saw you. Yeah.
Since
you're
then, right?
on an annual.
Not. No.
Maybe not.
No, maybe not. I think that was it.
Okay.
So as you can see,
you're very good
we're
friends.
Both very excited and have a lot to catch up on.
It's a lot of texting. Not a lot.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Fair amount.
A lot of my friendships are just texting now.
Yeah.
I think everyone's, gotten really lazy.
Yeah. Very few phone calls.
Mm-mm.
But I'm trying to get back into that, though. Just.
Yeah.
Making real phone calls.
Yeah. Like in the middle of texting, and it's just a quick conversation.
Do people freak out? What are you doing? Why are you doing
this? No, text, like, let's just get on the phone. What are we, it's a mutual thing.
No one answers the phone, though. So do you leave, I don't even, like, I don't leave voice messages because I feel it's just
annoying. You don't like having evidence.
Exactly. But it's also annoying. It's just annoying.
Yeah. It's just too easy.
So you just hang up. So I don't think that phone thing's going to work. Or maybe just for me. No one they see my name and they don't pick up. But
well, you can't do bits anymore. Like you can't, hey, how you doing? Right. Like, you know who's calling, caller ID, text. But you can do text bits. Anyway.
Yes. We do text bits. We don't ever have real conversations.
Do you guys use GIFs in your texts?
No.
How's your GIF game?
I try not,
mine's terrible.
It's fun. It's all so dumb, but that's what makes it fun.
Right.
Although I always talk about get a plan that has bit minutes.
Right.
But everything's unlimited now, so it doesn't matter. Before that.
Not Cricket Wireless. That's not unlimited.
Oh, it's not?
No. I think that's just like you give them whatever cash is in your pocket and get a few texts.
That seems fair.
I got my first chain text that I think I've ever gotten.
Ugh.
That was like,
really?
Send this to 10 people
or you'll have a
bad sex life.
Oh, yeah. That's a bad.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty fun.
I was assuming to get group one. Text.
I would have thrown my phone right in the garbage right there. just a violent. So what'd you do?
I sent it to 10 people.
All right, good.
I don't want a bad love life.
No. Oh, well, yeah. I didn't know it was about, about becoming rich and making a lot of money. But love's more important. Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
So.
Welcome to LA.
Live
in Brooklyn, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
It's up and coming.
Been here for a little bit.
Yeah. Been there a while.
How often do you guys do this? Once a week?
Oh, yeah. I see.
That's it?
It's turning the tables. Once a week.
Okay.
Do we seem like we're better at it than that?
I'm just curious.
Or does it seem once a year, maybe?
I'm just curious about like podcasts. Everyone's got a podcast. Yes.
Right.
So many.
There are
many. Really
just
a lot.
The worst.
Yeah. And this
just
isn't
the
even
word,
our.
The word podcast is the awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Someone didn't think that would catch on.
Yeah.
I was like, a podcast. And now it's the only term used.
Do you guys like doing it? Is it
we
fun?
We do. And we also have fun. We have a true crime podcast. We have a whole.
That's also the two of you? Related.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds fun.
We should do one just about petty crimes in the office. It's
and then bridge burners.
Low stakes. And then
bridge burners.
Do you want to? You were just saying the bridge burners idea.
Well, that one's mine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Would you like to burn a bridge right now? Or you want to save it for your podcast?
This could be the pilot. Okay. This could be the pilot for your show, Bridge Burners.
Well, we'll find out at the end if we burned any bridges.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's the angle. Like you at the end, did we burn any bridges today?
Right. Oh, that's good.
You go over there. Oh, maybe we did.
Let us, or ask the listeners to let us know.
Yeah. Right. Can have some fun. Sound effects.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you done a lot of podcasts?
I haven't.
Yeah. You're just,
I have a bad attitude about them.
You're probably hard to reach. You're a hard man to pin down.
Well, I'm in New York, in Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have studios there.
It's like 4 million people.
They won't allow
in
them.
That one borough. Just to let listeners know, John's sipping a tea. What kind of tea is that?
It said it's an Earl Grey, but it said like Earl Grey. Is it creme?
Oh boy!
Oh.
Is that like a creamy? It's yummy. I put some oat milk in it and some honey. Delicious.
Welcome to LA.
And I've got these strawberry granola minis.
Just from what you added to your tea.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what else do you have?
Don't worry about it. Doesn't
okay.
Don't worry about it.
I do worry.
So John was a writer on The Conan Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Among many, many other things. But what years were you there? Early 2000s?
April 98 to April
2003.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
5 years, as I was saying, in the kitchen when I was getting my tea.
Right.
5 years almost to the day.
Wow.
Is that one of the longer jobs that you've had?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I guess,
so that you felt the itch at 5 years and you were ready to move on?
I think I felt
you
the
felt
itch.
The itch. Before 5 years.
Probably 99.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe 2000.
You were itchy. You were allergic right away.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say seasonal. Right away.
No, I know.
I think maybe a year and a half or so I was like feeling the itch. And then I did one of those. I remember hearing that some of the writers had done sabbaticals. I'm like, oh, that sounds nice.
Right.
Maybe that's what I need.
Right.
And I sandwiched one between 2 weeks off. So I had a really nice long chunk. And I was like, that was pretty decent, but I don't know. Am I recharged? I can't tell. And then 9/11 happened.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
like, oh, I think that's a weird time to just leave a job.
Oh, yeah. We always come to 9/11 on this podcast.
It comes up a lot.
It does come up a lot.
And I think everyone reevaluated what they were doing after 9/11.
Sure.
So, yeah.
It was at the Conan O'Brien show.
That's right. You had Safe Harbor.
Well, I just watched a sketch that you did the voice for, John, where you voiced a Bill Clinton puppet, a very bad Clinton puppet.
There was a puppet in the writer's room that, you know, people send in, like companies that are trying to sell gag stuff. It's like, send it to a comedy show.
Yeah. And like maybe fart underwear.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So this puppet had been around, I think, a year or so. And it was this cheesy rubber hand puppet of Bill Clinton with his arm around a blonde and a brunette.
Yeah.
And we would just, you know, like at 10 o'clock at night, take a Bill Clinton puppet break. And you, John Glazer, started doing... Hey, you were doing a parody.
The Bill Clinton impression?
It was a deliberately bad Bill Clinton impression, like with his catchphrase was just like, oh, I think like, oh my, or something like
that. Hey, girls, I can't remember.
Yeah, it was like, hey, girls, and oh my. And that was the whole, but
the reason I brought it up is because I noticed the date on it was October of 2011. So... Or sorry, of 2001.
Okay,
so it was the month after September 11th.
Yes,
and I was.
Let's come back with this.
That's what I loved about it. Was you guys didn't change your comedy?
Oh man!
Well,
in the post 9/11 era.
Oh man! After 9/11, all late night shows went off the air for a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
and then Letterman came back first, and then everyone came back and gave their 9/11 commentary. And then, but then also it was super, very ginger. Everyone stepped very gingerly with, you know, what comedy they would do. And I think
that's where Bill Clinton puppet comes in.
I remember for me, we don't have to go down a 9/11 tangent, but right. I guess we did and we're there. But
sure.
Because I remember being pretty conflicted. Like, remember when we went back, I'm like, it's been a week. Why are we back here?
Right.
And
I felt like it was 10 days, like it was longer than
it was. Was it? I thought it was a week, but maybe it was.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, why are we here? This just seems stupid.
Right.
And then, do you remember there was an actor, Chris Edwards? We use him as a cop a lot.
Yes.
Real New York-y guy, mustache.
Right.
And I think he.
And a real cop? I think
he was a firefighter.
Okay.
Oh.
And he had a cop uniform.
He had a cop uniform.
So that's why we used
him. Because it would be like at 10 to 2, oh, shoot, we need a cop in 15 minutes.
Yeah, we used him a lot, and so he became friendly with a lot of people.
Right,
and I remember he, he was down there at Ground Zero helping.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, he had a bad knee, and just he was there every day, I think, just because I think he was a firefighter and retired when he hurt his knee and then got into acting.
Right.
And
it's
so
a classic Hollywood story.
It's a classic New York service story.
But he was, you know, great guy. We all really loved him and used him a lot. Mm-hmm. And then he came by. They were going to all these funerals, all these firefighters. And I remember him and one of his friends, and they came by, and they're in their dress uniforms. They'd been at, what was the church near 30 Rock? Was it St. Patrick's?
St. Patrick's.
On Fifth Avenue.
Right.
And I remember just those two guys came up, and the whole crew gathered, like, in the middle of the – I think we had those new offices, maybe.
Right.
And they were just telling stories about how they would go down there and they would just be there all day at Ground Zero, digging up bodies. And then they would come back and watch the show just to like have a break.
Right.
And I know that made me feel better about going back to work. And just, I'm like, all right, so this stupid stuff we're doing, like a Clinton puppet, serves a purpose. And it just allows people to kind of
think about something else.
Yeah. Especially after that. So that made me feel better for sure.
Yeah. No, it definitely – speaking of The Office after 9/11, it was maybe 3 weeks afterwards. We're all sitting there, and my sister called me. I think you guys – we were all in the office together, and my sister called. She goes, are you in the – do you work at the NBC building? I'm like, yes. And she goes, I just heard on the radio there's anthrax in your building.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what? And – somehow it leaked to the news before they told us in the building. And just then, like, Conan came in and Jeff Ross, the executive producer, came in and said, oh, we're supposed to watch the feed. And it was, I think, Andy Lack, the head of NBC News, is like, there's anthrax on the third floor. Don't worry. It's not, it's the kind that you have to, you know, touch
it
to get it. So it's not airborne. No panicking if you're not on the third floor.
But if you are on the third floor,
yeah, you're fucked.
Yeah, for sure, panic. Third floor, different story.
And a lot of people, it's funny, it's interesting how people reacted to that news. Mm-hmm. Some people literally, without saying anything, left. Other people, you know, were taking Cipro for a month after that. And other people were like, yes! It's anthrax. Yeah,
some people went to the third floor.
Yeah.
Show it to me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Where is it? I'm not afraid. Let's see the envelope.
What does it taste like?
But that was, do you remember that? That was
I remember that. That crazy. Freaked me out.
Yeah.
I remember, I'm sure I had like dust on my, I think I had some kind of dust on my keyboard. And I'm like, oh God, is this it? I was like freaking out. I freaked out.
It was powdered sugar from a donut.
Yes.
It really freaked me out. Well, do you remember I buzzed my hair?
You shaved your head.
Yeah. I had this crazy reaction where I just, because I had no hair for long. I had a buzzed head for years. And
right.
I finally grew it out and I was really, I've got my curly hair again. And I'm trying different products. What's going to make it the curliest? And I was really in this mode of having big curly hair, you know, and spending all this time putting shit in it and getting it to look
you kind of had a bit of a fro.
It was pretty gigantic. Yeah. And then just that day, I'm like, I can't wake up tomorrow and give a shit. I really had a weird freak out and I actually owned a Clippers, and Ruth, our writer's assistant, lived close to me, and I called her and I went over because we're just watching the news, and I brought my Clippers with me and I went in her bathroom and just buzzed it.
This was on September 11th.
Yes.
All right.
Extreme reaction.
Yeah. It's dramatic.
Your reaction when you saw that news was to grab your razor.
It really was. I really was like, I can't give a shit about my looks.
Yeah. I'm going to enlist.
Who cares? Right, it really was. Yeah. It was cuckoo.
Yeah. Well,
but I saw Dorf the other night and Kevin Cecilia Pleva.
Oh, and yeah, she was our casting director on the show at the time.
And he was talking about
it. And Kevin was a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was what?
We were talking about that, and I was telling that story or we were reminiscing about it. And he was read somebody like talking to veterans, like people in extreme stressful situations, you just have these odd reactions.
Yeah, sure.
That was mine.
And then it was to pick up that Clinton puppet.
And then it was, what can I do?
And then a nation was healed.
Yes.
I remember we had to talk Conan into that a bit because the joke was, it was bad. Like, he hates comedy, or he tends to not enjoy comedy that is making fun of comedy.
Yeah.
And bad on purpose. His argument is,
it's bad on purpose?
No, well, but he can sniff it out.
Right, right.
So, you know, I think this was the writers, we were all just crying, and we were crying during rehearsal. We just loved it, and he did it. And it did – I watched the clip again.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it since it aired. And it did great. It did great the same way it did
it
at 10 o'clock.
I barely even remember it now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm always amazed at the things that I don't remember. Like,
that you were in.
Yeah, yes. I was in.
Right.
Even just screwing around in the office.
Right. But you
can
did
I some, say fucking around?
Yeah, you can say fucking around.
Ooh, whatever the fuck you want. That felt good.
Yeah. We said the C word last week.
We did.
But even honestly, like fucking around the office with it, it's kind of starting to come back to me. With that puppet. Yeah. Hey, girls, what are we going to do?
Right,
Jesus Christ. Oh, man.
Yeah, that was
it.
Oh, that was it. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
And that was the whole thing. You had two lines.
Yeah, he wouldn't even, it's not even a response. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Oh, boy. You could probably do that for voiceover work now.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll put it on my voice reel.
Do you have bits that you did that you do remember that are like were your favorite things that you did? Or
this is what the fans tune into this for.
Yeah,
right?
Man.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know what they tune in for.
Well, yeah, we don't really know. Right. But I do think that there are serious Conan fans.
Yes.
I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. You know, they like to know. I think they like hearing how sausage Comedy yes. Sausage is made.
Mm-hmm. So they were scrolling. They skipped all the blah, 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 blah.
And they've learned to love 9/11 stories because we bludge them. There's no
Segway Sam. Oh, that's what I want to
see. Segway Sam. I watched an old Segway
Sam. A lot of podcasts do a long monologue at the top of the show about like what they ate that week.
And right.
Our version of that is 9/11 stories.
Exactly.
Sure.
That's our way
it's in. Self-indulgent, but yeah, we love it.
And they're like, how are they going to, well, I don't want to say dig out of this one, but. Oof, sorry.
Segway Sam. That last
Segway Sam was a character you did.
Oh,
Segway
yeah.
Segway Sam was a character I did.
Conan would go, you know, he'd mention, I don't know, who's on the show the next day. And then he'd go, oh, Andy, I don't know. I'm supposed to introduce, my next guest. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. I don't know how to switch topics.
I can't think of a smooth
right, a smooth transition.
Yeah.
And Andy can go, well, you need a visit.
Like that's ever stopped him before.
Right, right. That's when the audience knew something was afoot. And Andy'd be like, well, you need a visit from, Segway Sam. And then.
It's an offensive Andy.
No, it's deadly accurate. As a matter of fact, if people are listening, Andy's here in the room and just took over the mic. That was Andy Richter.
Because you didn't do a Conan. You were just talking as yourself as Conan.
How do you do
And then switched into an Andy.
Yeah.
Very offensive.
I don't know how to do a Conan impression.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. I don't know anyone who does a Conan impression.
No. And just Conan.
There might be a lack of demand for it, possibly, but there's just, I have yet to hear one. Well, I'll apologize to Andy the next time I see
him. I don't know. I think. You owed Andy one because he was hard on you when he came on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Andy's always abusive to me.
Really?
Yeah. In general, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's okay.
So Segway Sam.
Yeah, so Segway Sam.
Segwaying back to Segway Sam.
You were in a silky robe and on a chase lounge. Oh. And you would have a butler pull you in.
Yeah.
And you would supply – you're a very unctuous – guy who just provided, someone
smooth
would say a
segues.
Word and you'd come up with an insane segue.
Yeah. And then, I remember then there was, they'd wheel me back out.
Right.
And then they'd get stuck again and I'd come back and be in like some kind of compromising situation.
Oh, right. I didn't remember. Maybe. Yeah.
That was the twist.
Yes. you'd be back, the one I saw, you came back in. There was, I think it was before we came up with the twist, I guess.
Did it at all?
You had to advance it.
Yeah. Oh, I see. I remember we used to always talk a lot about hating all those like comedy terms, like the twist.
Right.
What's the blow?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We never.
The reveal. Ugh.
Those are like sitcom.
Yeah.
I think we read an article where it was explaining all the terms they use mm-hmm. for shorthand in the sitcom writer's room.
Yeah.
We didn't have any of those terms.
The twist.
The twist.
Give it a twist. Mm-hmm.
The blow. And then the clams.
The blow.
Clams. Was a word.
Clams.
To describe things.
Interview spiders.
Well, we still use clams.
from that article,
what was clams?
We adopted clams. Clams are bits that it's like, oh, that'll get a laugh.
A go-to
that'll work.
Joke.
Like back then it was like Al Roker's will, do a joke about his weight problem.
God.
Larry King
it was a different
old.
World back then.
Yeah.
Where you could, it's like.
too many of those for me.
I know.
A lot of just bad, fat jokes, gay jokes, just mm-hmm. the guns, the worst.
When you say guns,
just
guns
like
just and bits.
Shitty punchlines, bad jokes, all the like celebrity stuff. I hated that.
Yeah. That was back then. We do it like, at least once a week, it was almost like filler stuff. Like,
oh yeah, it was a lot.
Children's drawings was a recurring bit.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the one I know you hated the most.
You guys didn't, I think on my last day,
right?
Maybe it was intentional. They did, or maybe just SAT analogies.
Oh,
ended up being on my last day. I was like, fuck these, man. Blankety blank, and then a funny rhyme. Oh, God. What the fuck, man?
That sounds like a joke suggestion of a desk piece.
SAT now.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We did
well,
it
I just started writing Gary Busey teeth jokes.
Right.
That was my response.
Gary Busey had two big front choppers.
I just couldn't do them. I would literally. I remember talking to, what's his name? He was a writer before me, monologue guy, Tom Agna.
Tom Agna, who's also a stand-up comic.
And yeah. He was, you know, he's like, hey, and this is right when I started. He's right. Like, and I think he was not there anymore. He's like, so how do you like it? I'm like, it's great. I love it. I hate all the celebrity driven stuff. He's like, yeah, that's like trying to just go take a shit when you don't have to.
Yes.
That's the perfect description. You're sitting on the toilet trying to push out some just piece of shit.
Yeah, because you know you're going to be on a long bus ride.
You can't. But it's not even though it's just, I have to go do this and I just can't. Like, I can't think of just these shitty, the worst jokes. And we would do those.
It would be a lot of times would be after dinner. And I'd be like, that's what we're doing the next day.
Yeah.
And
just sit at my computer. I'm like, I can't do these. I don't want to.
Well, and you know, it's hard because you know the easy joke that's going to probably get a laugh. But you also know better than doing that. So you're torn ethically.
But I had fun doing all the Gary Busey, just like trying to. And I remember there was some kind of board, like a fan comment board at the time in the early days of the internet and all that. Brian Stack found something where he's like, someone wrote a comment like, you know, yeah, they're making fun of, I guess Gary Busey has big teeth or so the writers think. Like it was some kind of thing where they clearly, I don't think, enjoyed it or whatever. Yeah. That really made me laugh, but I still like, and some of those got on, I think. Some of those actually made it in Busey's teeth.
Well, we sort of manufacture our own clams that were then maybe only funny to us. Like we went through a period where it was all Wilford Brimley.
Right.
People thinking he was dead and he's not dead. But it's like, is anyone thinking about him?
No. I don't know. But you're going to make them think about it and then keep. And I think that also bled over from the monologue, which was very news and celebrity driven. Mm-hmm. So jokes that would work in the monologue, then it was like, oh, well, you can go with that premise in other bits.
Yeah. But there was like when I started working there, the gap between like the shitty stuff and the awesome stuff was so wide.
Right.
And then just, you know, over the years, it slowly started to even out. And it was
the awesome stuff has gone down to meet the shitty stuff is what you're saying.
I wouldn't say the awesome stuff went down as much as the shitty stuff came up because there was still plenty of fun. Like even when I quit, it was still like a great job. There was so much fun stuff. But it was starting to run neck and neck. And it was never going to go the other way.
No.
But it was always going to hover there where I just thought, I know I have to leave before I have children. And I just feel stuck here with this really.
Were you married yet?
No.
No.
Yeah. No. Although my wife, my now wife, then girlfriend, we moved in together the same week I quit.
Oh, wow.
That's massive stress.
That is a lot of change all at once.
Yeah.
That's when I would have shaved my head. But.
Was she? Did you have a job you were going to? Right.
What's that? No.
So she moved in with you with no job prospects.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had been socking. I'm like, I'm putting money away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Trying to.
So you didn't. You really didn't know what your next exact step was at the time.
No.
I just knew I had to leave.
You had to go. Well, I did not have a job, but I knew, and I'd been. You know, we were joking about it, but I really knew I was. I did want to. Eventually go do other things. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get back into acting and do more performing. Mm-hmm. And that was always kind of a motivating factor as well.
Right.
It was still hard to leave. I mean, like, you know, there's always times when you know something's the right decision. It doesn't make it easier.
Yeah.
Right. No.
And I was just sobbing that day. And
you were?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Because you had a running joke with me about leaving. You were just.
Oh, yeah. How long ago did I give you? I had a running joke with Mike where I gave him an envelope and I just said, one day, this is my resignation letter.
Right.
One day I'm going to come in here and I'm going to say, pull it out.
Open it.
Yeah. You put it in my top left drawer. So a lot on nights where we're writing children's drawings, you'd be falling off the couch and I'd make eye contact with you and you would just
point at the drawer.
You'd point at the drawer like.
No, I thought it was things where there'd be days where I would walk in and you'd say, is this it?
Right.
And then that went on for a while.
Yes.
And then when I actually came in, and you're like, this it? I'm like, yeah.
He didn't believe you.
Really?
Yeah.
And then it was real.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was at least a year, maybe two.
It's a very long running.
Sat in that.
Inside.
It's a fun running bit.
Yeah.
About quitting.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just the threat.
Burning bridges.
Save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake. Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer rear tine tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And then, so when did Delocated happen? That was based on a character you did on Late Night.
Yeah, it was pretty, it was very similar. And I'd been doing that character. I did that character, like that was in my submission packet.
Oh wow.
That character. And it was, I always really loved.
You had a good packet.
Oh, yeah. It was real
good. Wow.
Real good.
It was
good.
Rock solid. I don't remember what else was in there. If there's any stuff that I actually did on the show.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that character is.
That was in my submission because I had been doing it. I was actually living here in LA.
Okay.
When I got hired at Conan, because I was here for.
Were you acting here? What were you?
I had two writing jobs. It was after I worked on Dana Carvey's show.
Yeah.
And then I had two jobs here. Not the greatest jobs, but they were both fun.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Burn bridges. Yeah.
I mean, I've talked about it before, but one was the Keenan Ivory Wayans talk show. That was the second one.
Uh-huh.
All but right. I had left that show months prior to getting hired at Conan.
Uh-huh.
And then this Jenny McCarthy had a sketch show on MTV.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, listen, it wasn't the best and it wasn't the worst. We did a lot of funny stuff,
right.
A lot of terrible shit, but it was a really fun job. Great people. Like Will Forte was a writer on that.
Oh, wow.
That's where I met John Benjamin. And there were some other very funny.
Oh, John writers. Benjamin worked on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was a fun time. There was just a fun group of people.
Yeah.
And Keenan is where I met Vernon Chapman.
It was
from
great.
PFR is a brilliantly funny guy.
Really funny.
And
so is Benjamin.
Yeah. But I mean, look, I mean, anytime I talk about that, it's always the lesson is you never know who you're going to work with at these jobs.
Right.
And, you know, Vernon is part of PFFR.
Nice
and
people.
I, yeah. Well, or just, you know, for sure be nice to people. But also, if you're kind of on the fence about a job and you're young and starting off, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And if you really feel that against it, don't do it. But you'll more often than not meet really cool people that you'll either work with down the road or
right.
they could hire you down the road.
Right.
And, you know, it might not be the best show, but it could be a really fun writing staff and the job, the day to day is just fun and just money and health insurance and all that stuff. And so there's always benefits.
I tell people just don't say no to anything.
Yeah.
Basically.
It usually outweighs the negatives. Even from an experience standpoint. I agree with that.
That's so, like the number one advice. People think there's an exact route to take, and it's like, it's
you
exactly what you guys
what
are saying.
Is. Yeah.
So don't say no to things. Get out of your house and
meet people.
It's amazing, you know, down the road, just you'll get something because a friend of yours will hear something
Someone
to recommend
will reach
you
out from nowhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, the kind of thing you don't plan going into it. Like, I'm going to, I always laugh at people who go, I'm here to network, which is always seems ridiculous. God. But genuinely making friends and early on, it just kind of.
Well, and those are the people that, at your early jobs that you're going to kind of come up with. And then it'll be cool to watch what everybody does.
Right.
And at some point you'll look around and say, hey, these are all successful people now. Yeah. This is really cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool. And even, with Vernon and, his group with John Lee and Allison Levy, that's the PFFR people.
Right.
Like, when I did Delocated.
Yeah.
It's a good, speaking of smooth segues.
Nice segue. Sam is alive and well in this room.
But I ended up needing to hire a production company, and they had just started to do that, and it was a perfect fit. And, they did all the shows that I've made.
Wow. Oh, great.
They were the production company.
Right.
And me and John and Vernon, we did the bulk of the writing together on all the shows.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we ended up hiring writers, outside writers, to help with the scripts just for a time standpoint.
Right.
But we, the three of us, did the bulk of the outlines, and we would hand those outlines off. We never had writer's rooms.
Right.
Mostly because the budgets were pretty small, but we just worked well, the three of us, and cranked it out. And
so it's like, let's get together again. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about the Delocated and then Neon Joe. And then you're talking about John Glazer Loves Gear. So you guys worked on all three of those together.
Yeah, they produced all three shows, and we wrote them all. Came up with all the bulk of the outlines. Uh-huh. And then we had writers like Kevin Dorff wrote some scripts, Joe Mandy.
Uh-huh. And Kevin was indie.
Kevin was indie located.
He was here.
So what you were asking about before, I had done like the Delocated version. I did the.
Can you just explain the.
Yes, it's a character for Conan in the thing I had done before I got hired. And I'd done it at a live show, this character, and put it in my submission packet. Mm-hmm. It was an impressionist who's in the witness protection program, and he still considers himself a real talent and wants to put himself out there, but doesn't want to get killed. So he puts a ski mask on to keep his anonymity intact and speaks with a voice modulator in that low kind of garbled voice. So you can't. And then the stupid joke is that all his impressions just sound like this.
Same.
And he's got like, and they're all
but
really
he has all the comedy patter, like
just shitty, the hackiest impressions, the worst jokes, but they're all, and he's hyper confident.
Right.
Which is always something that I think Conan and I shared, that love of like the hyper confident,
terrible at
boo.
Yeah,
his
super
job.
Snug, but just the worst comedy.
Right.
And just makes him even a bigger asshole.
Yes.
So I ended up doing that on the show a few times. And it was always the impressionist, and his name was Kim in quotes, which I just wanted, like, so you don't know, is he a man? Is he a woman? Even though it's obvious.
What's his ethnicity?
Yeah. And then after I left the show, I still just really wanted to do something with that character and came up with the idea of Delocated.
Right.
And got lucky to do it.
That was great. That was an Adult Swim.
So did you, I mean, just to kind of unpack the process, did you then take it as a pitch to places? Did you like put it on film and take it around?
I ended up first pitching it. I think I was out here for something and I pitched it to Comedy Central first and they passed.
Ugh.
Someone there got fired for that decision.
Yeah. And then...
is that even a network anymore?
And then I pitched it to Adult Swim and I ended up making a demo. Like I just took it upon myself. And even when I pitched it to Comedy Central, I did a live version of the character. They were all waiting in a conference room
when
I came in. And because to me, it's better to actually hear it.
Yeah.
And see it, because, if you're just writing, and he wears a ski mask and he talks like this, you just don't get a sense of that. And so I did a live pitch sort of, and then after, and seen and took the mask off and chit-chatted about it.
Right.
It's tough when you do an in-character pitch. Like, do I have to keep the ski mask on the whole time?
I would have, like, if it didn't go well.
That's what I should have done.
I would keep that mask on and be like, all right, thank you.
And then just wear it home in my car.
Right, exactly. you're a fearless performer. I don't know a lot of people who don't get self-conscious, but you seem to me to just be always fearless performer.
Does that feel accurate?
Yeah.
Do you feel that way?
I guess I do.
Yeah.
I try not to worry about it too much. And I wasn't always that way. That just comes with experience and confidence and getting,
Mm-hmm.
getting jobs and feeling like, oh, this works. And, doing shows and just feeling like, oh, people, this is
right.
And so, yeah,
and you're so great at playing characters that are just like, you're just saying, just overly confident.
Yeah.
And
oh man, it's the best. It's so fun. It's so much fun.
I know. It's like, it's fun to so be in your dick. Wheelhouse. Right, right, right.
Do you like, does audience feedback affect you? Like if something's not doing as well as you thought, does that get in your head or do you just plow through it until you win them over?
I think more often than not, it doesn't. It, and again, it wasn't always that way. I remember when I was first starting off, even in college, and I was trying stand up and if it didn't go well, it would really just be, I'd be so hard on myself and I'd have a really tough time. And now I just don't even worry about it because it's just, you're just try. I just try things.
Right.
And if I like it, I'll just keep, maybe either keep doing it or if it's not working, I'll just not do it anymore. I mean, more often than not, it goes well.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, who are you talking to?
Right.
No, but it definitely came over time. And,
And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you just mentioned something. I don't want to detour too much from talking about the show Delocated, but a lot of writers, former writers on this show, on the old Conan show, were stand-ups, but you didn't really. You came more from the improv background, right?
Yeah, I did a little bit in Chicago and I did a little in college.
Of what?
Of stand-up.
Okay.
You know, I was a semi-finalist in the Certs Doritos comedy competition.
Whoa, hosted by Bobby Collins.
One of those things, man, it was like, down at spring break and just, oh God, thinking about that old stand, just so bad.
Right.
So bad. But I did, I went down to Daytona Beach. It was me, Margaret Cho, and then these guys like Red Johnny and the Round Guy.
Oh, you know those guys? I've heard of that. Yeah. Yes. Red Johnny and the Round
they
Guy.
They were really funny, super nice guys. Yeah. I think one of the guys does a lot of voices.
I don't know.
Anyway, but. So I kind of thought, I guess maybe I'll try this. But I was interested more in improv and did that in Chicago. And that was more my background. I still do live shows, but it's not traditional stand-up. I don't do clubs. It's more conceptual and more bits. I don't know if that's even a word people outside of comedy are familiar with.
More like character.
Well, they say skits.
Yeah. I hate the word skit. I even hate saying characters. I hate that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Do characters. Even
I tell
when
stories.
When I did the Kim character on Conan, I remember that was part of it. Like, let me introduce you to my character.
Right.
It's just so gross.
It's gross.
But that gave you a way to do it and
that is
also
essentially,
not be connected to it, you know,
it is essentially what it is. Like I am doing this thing in LA and it's this live special idea I had and it's all these old, what I call just conceptual bits. They're essentially characters. I just hate saying characters. It's not precious. It's not about the impression.
Right.
It's more about the concept.
Right.
I'm not changing my voice unless there's a joke attached to it.
Right.
Are there wigs involved?
One character has a wig.
Oh, you made him wince.
One character has a wig. It's like a shitty wig, and there's costumes.
I love wigs. That's a selling point for me.
Yeah.
Wigs are fun.
So you're fine with the word bits.
Sure.
All right, cool. Bits is
to a point. Improv is my background.
Right.
I love it. I love doing it, but I don't necessarily love talking about it. There were some writers that would come in and start chit-chatting improv.
What's the game
and I'm
here?
Get out. Fucking get out. Ugh. Go talk about that somewhere else, please. Remember last week at the Herald and Blood? I'm like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
It's like hanging out with ski bums talking about the slopes that went down the day before. Comedians would do the same thing I used to think am I supposed to be only talking about comedy all the time? Because I'm interested in other things.
I felt bad when I was at the Keenan show and it was me and some of the more sketchy writers had an office and then some of the stand-ups had their own office.
Right.
And some of these guys were just nice guys, but just really bad. You know, they're kind of those cliche. They had this comic voice. They always talked in some of these guys. And always coming into our office like, hey, what do you think about this thing? And just telling jokes.
You know
and
what I was thinking about? Yeah.
They're just forced.
It's a premise.
Being on in a forced way.
All the time. And even I'd be on the phone and someone would come in and I would literally just gesture to my phone. I'm on the phone.
Right.
And I put a sign and it was just one or two guys. That always did it. And I put a sign on our door that just said, if you're coming in with a joke to tell, stay out. And I felt really bad. And one of the guys actually came in like a couple weeks later. He's like, hey, man, you know, I get it. And he like points at the sign and I had to play dumb like, no, it's for everybody. Everybody does it. And right. Oh, and I felt so bad. But God damn, it was so annoying.
Usually those people don't even know it's directed at them.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, he did. I felt terrible.
Oh. Yeah, you didn't feel that bad.
I did.
Come on.
I did.
It was a bit. It was an office bit.
Hey, it's a bit.
Hey,
it's a bit.
Office bit.
Oh, my God.
So Delocated, you, with this small shop, I guess you probably, like, did you direct them and edit them, the episodes, or?
I directed the pilot just because I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't want to direct. I'm not really, I don't have a lot of experience doing that.
All right.
But, I mean, hire a good DP that really knows what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's what all directors do.
Yeah, I mean, you.
That's what Scorsese does.
And that's what you should do. I mean, the DP is, they do so much.
Yeah.
So But I did not want to direct the series. That's just too much work. And if you're in it, I don't know. It seems like directing
it's hard to direct yourself. Yeah.
That is the most impressive thing to me.
I know.
People who are starring in something and directing it.
I hate it.
How?
Like, give me a break.
I know.
I think it's obnoxious. It seems
all due respect. I guess this is a potential bridge burner, right?
Yeah.
Anyone who directs himself.
Right, right.
Fuck you. You're so good.
Woody fucking Allen.
Well, my favorite version of that was Ben Affleck directing Argo. And there's that shot where he's getting
shirtless
and you see the six pack and it's like, you directed that. I hate
That was all his.
Made me so
you
mad.
Lit, that was all his DP.
You lit that.
You wanted the abs to be
the
lit.
The angle was just, perfect.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
90 takes.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff's kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But you're in a movie now, Hustlers.
Yes. Oh, my Thank God.
You. Which I
haven't seen it yet, but I'm dying to see it.
Or you just said I'm in it.
No, I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Hey, you're in Hustlers.
That's a huge movie.
Thank you. I usually run out to see every J-Lo vehicle, but I haven't seen this one yet. But
That's a huge movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I want to. I just haven't seen it yet.
Right.
That was something that I just because it was in New York and
right. mm-hmm.
There was a couple things. I guess I think I had an opportunity to also audition for one of the Wall Street guys. But the thing I did, it was a much smaller part, but way more fun because I could just eat a sandwich and be a dick.
Oh, okay.
Really fun.
I didn't know. Yeah.
Classic Glazer wheelhouse sandwich.
Did you get to
asshole.
See some Perfect. Butts?
No,
oh.
My scene was in a Old Navy.
Okay.
But I didn't even. Yeah, there were no butts even when I was there. But it was
Were you
super
acting opposite any of the
me and J-Lo.
Stars? Really?
Is it you and J-Lo?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm trying to get J-Glay to trend on social media.
How's it going?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't checked. I'm not on Twitter, so I have no idea.
I'd love if you ended up with her.
If I ended up with her?
Yeah.
Like in life?
Yeah, like J-Glay.
Yeah.
You're the one who brought up J-Glay, and now
Well, not like as a romantic thing, but I guess that would be...
Yeah,
well, so if my marriage falls apart because me and Jennifer Lopez end up together,
I think your wife would understand.
Don't you think that that's one of those outstanding extenuating circumstances where you're like, it's fine, you should pursue this.
All right, fine.
Yeah,
fine.
Just for the stories, and then you can come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Jay Glay.
Right.
Well, that's great. I mean, do you?
It was really fun to do.
How is doing a movie versus working on a TV show?
It just depends.
Better budget.
Depends on the project.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been lucky to do, I haven't done a lot of movies, but they've all been pretty fun.
Yeah.
And all really small parts, but.
Right.
Do you have to go audition for those or how did those come up at this point?
Same thing. There's been stuff that's been offered and the Hustlers thing I auditioned for.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends if you know the person and they want to put you in it or whatever.
And so you auditioned and then were there callbacks for that part? Like, how does that work?
I think that when I just auditioned and got it.
They're like, okay.
Yeah.
He's our,
did you bring a sandwich into the audition?
No, I used my improv skills.
Yeah.
I put my improv skills to the test.
Oh, you did space work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Object work.
Okay.
Object work. Yeah, I think I faked a sandwich.
Nice.
Maybe I brought one. I can't remember. I don't think so.
Yeah. That would
but
be.
It was fun. It was great. And she was super nice.
Man, I got to see that now.
I know. I can't wait to see it.
When it's on Netflix.
You think we'll get a screener for that one?
Oh, we'll get a screener for Hustlers. I'm going to watch it around Christmas time. And I'll take a still shot of the screen and send it to you.
And your credit,
please.
Yeah.
Oh.
But you said you're doing a live show in LA right now?
Yeah, just one night.
Oh, cool. Oh.
Yeah. With all my characters. Okay.
Oh, God. You're Gary Busey. You play all of his teeth, which I think is a tour de force. Has this show happened yet?
No, it's next week. Okay, I've done it a bunch in New York because it was an idea that I've had that I've wanted to pitch, and hopefully someday it'll be a live special somewhere.
What's
that
the
was
name
the
of
idea.
It?
I don't know. I mean, I just call it like I don't really all have a name for it. If I have
John Glazer, to be work in progress.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I just called it John Glazer's Coming to Town. Oh. Picture me on a jet ski from my honeymoon. But I don't know what it would be called. But this is, I'm just sort of still figuring it out. But I did it a bunch in New York. Mm-hmm. It involves someone else. Like the concept is that I cancel and whoever I get like a big name to host it, like they were just going to come and introduce me and go watch. Uh-huh. And then they get roped into being the MC for this cavalcade of characters.
Doubling down.
I think that's
characters.
The name of it.
Cavalcade of characters.
Yeah. So who'd you get to do it
Netflix
in New York?
Show, right? The characters. Ugh, what a bad name.
Oh, I don't think I saw
on Netflix?
That.
I think so. It was a while ago. Oh, some of them were really good. Shows. Like Paper Lent did one that was really awesome, and John Early's was really funny. It was just a bad name for a series.
Yeah.
But some of the people doing it were super funny and some cool conceptual ideas for them. But anyway.
Yeah. So who'd you get to do it in New York?
Scott Adsit did it.
Oh, great.
And Adam Scott's going to do it here.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great.
It'll be pretty fun. It's really fun.
A really nice
he seems
guy.
Perfect for that.
Yeah.
He's great. And we've known each other for years from Second City in Chicago.
Oh.
He lives in New York. But yeah, so we'll see. I like it. I think it's funny. I mean, I was doing it in New York just to even make sure that I even liked it.
Right.
Because I thought this could easily be like a, oh boy.
Right.
I don't think it is, but I hope
right,
not.
Right, right,
I saw when Kevin Dorff and I were having, because I think I would say that a lot at Conan, right? Oh boy. Shitty stuff.
Yep.
And we saw some, you know, like some dudes on those scooters that you got in LA.
Right.
Dorff called it an oh boy mobile.
Oh boy.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
Oh, boy.
You guys don't have those in New York? Are they banned?
I don't think they are in New York.
Okay.
Not that I've noticed. There was a
Just
like ride them and then just throw them on the ground. It's like it's garbage. Insane.
He said there's like kind of almost like Vespa-like bikes.
Oh, yeah. That sounds
Brooklyn. Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're electric
scooters.
He's been
using those. They're electric scooters.
I forgot it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they have. But that's at least like an actual motorized vehicle that you're
a little more substantial
to some annoying scooter,
or it's on the sidewalk, and then it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, you have to park it somewhere. You don't just ride a scooter and throw it on the ground, and there's piles of them.
I saw one literally just thrown on someone's lawn this morning.
Oh, Dorff said there was one just under his car. Weird.
You need those mirrors on sticks now before you back out.
I think I did a coffee table book about this, actually.
You did?
Or it was like badly discarded
e-scooters.
And it was like in an old man's bowl of soup.
The first time we saw them was in San Diego. And that city, it's the Wild West down there. They're just... I think they were like, yes, we want scooters here. Oh, no attempt to ban them or anything.
They're awful.
It is the Wild West.
They're not good. Anyway.
So you wouldn't move to LA is what you're saying.
I don't know. I mean, it's like
you've mentioned it a few times.
We've talked about it constantly, my wife and I, and sometimes I feel like I
miss the window. Is she in the biz?
She's not. Hmm. She's totally open to it.
She is.
Yeah.
And you have kids. I mean, that's a giant.
That is a big
move. It's different
move.
From obviously being a single rat that can just move around the country.
Yeah. I don't know. At this point, I think we might be too entrenched
in
New York with kids and schools and friends and my wife and her.
Yes.
Oh, God. We don't do that. We tried it.
Oh.
It's the worst.
We tried the co-op, too. God but my damn. Wife is like...
I love the idea of it.
The Brooklyn,
I love
the Brooklyn like, Food Co-op it's a great we're talking about.
Yeah, Park Slope Food Co-op.
Oh, my God. It's famous. It's one of the few in the country that's, you know... been going for 30 or 40 years.
But I like the idea of it. We tried it. I did it. And right away, I'm like, no.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Like it's a
because
place.
Because of the other people.
And
price check on the Israeli yogurt. Like it's just like just the everything's and all the people there, super annoying. It's not, you know, I tried to do one of the shifts where I could just put headphones on and stock the shelves.
Right.
So I would be happy to be myself. In a warehouse or
I'd be there at 6 a.m. and I'm in this refrigerated area stacking eggs, and I'm like, We don't know what's on the show today. And I'm here stacking dozens of eggs. I'm like,
so
this
funny.
Doesn't. But my wife was like, oh, we're going to join. I'm joining the co-op. I said, that's great. Have fun.
How much? And how many hours do you have to put in?
Well, I thought she could join as an individual. No. It's your
team. Yeah, you both have to do shifts. Mm. My wife.
I was outraged.
Did both of our shifts after a while because I just like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
You have to do it also. That actually, what you just said,
you're allowed, like, to, you're allowed to do that?
Yeah. If one person does the family,
she's doing characters.
All the family shift, you can do that.
Oh, wow. Because
some people, I think, have their kids do it if they're old enough.
Oh.
Now you're wondering why Cynthia didn't offer to do that for you.
Not in a million years.
But she tried, my wife, and then it just became too much too annoying.
Yeah.
But your thing about like filling like bags of olives or whatever and thinking about the show made me think of a funny story that Tommy Blacha told me, like, just the whole, and we would always joke about like just the ridiculousness of our jobs. And
right.
when the show is in reruns and we'd all get these stacks of residuals.
Right. And like, Tommy was a writer on the show.
Mm-hmm. And granted, really they were like stacks of, you know, 25-cent checks, but it's still money.
Yeah.
Right.
And you would always joke, like, when the revolution happens, we're the first to go.
Oh, are getting money for doing nothing.
For
doing something they
did it like
would have done
4 months
shit.
Ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And even what they did the first time is questionable. And now they're getting checks for it because it repeated somewhere.
But there were several things along those lines, like just the importance of what we're doing and how ridiculous it is.
Right.
Do you remember the thing where someone filled that condom with Diet Coke and then tied it to the ceiling and it literally hung there for months and months. And just eventually like syrup started slowly dripping through it. And it was just these stalactites.
Right.
And it was just so
condoms
vile.
Are it was not good totally watertight, it sounds like.
If
you this took
it
months.
Broke down.
If you're wearing it for several months, it will start to leak.
Yeah. But somebody, and it was around the time of one of those pending Writers Guild strikes, that someone's idea that we should someone should make a drawing of that condom hanging from the ceiling and then with like a Ghostbusters circle through it. And then we'd all wear those t-shirts on the picket line. More money for this.
Right, exactly.
We get paid more than teachers was always the joke.
No, it was.
But Blotch's thing was how like lawyers might wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I forgot that key piece of evidence for this murder case to get my client off. He's innocent.
Right.
And we would wake up, or he would say he'd wake up similarly in a cold sweat, like, oh, I forgot to order the clown wig.
And
it was the same urgency.
Right.
Because you'd get in trouble if you're like, well, where's the, just the stupid.
Because there was rehearsal the next day at 10 a.m. And it's like,
oh, wow.
If I didn't order yesterday, we're not going to get it.
No wig, guys. You know, and everyone's mad at you. Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, well, your rehearsals were at 10 a.m., so everything basically had to be written the night before.
I was trying to add drama in the story.
No, it was never. By the time I left, it was starting to, I think, crack down a little bit. I used to
be an early
11:30 that first year.
Right.
It was awesome.
And yeah,
it started to be a little more like, be in by 10, please, or whatever.
There would be morning rehearsals for, like, run-throughs.
Yeah, yeah.
Without Conan and Andy.
Right, right.
Where you'd try
that
to.
Early?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Maybe I was gone.
Yeah, man.
And I was long gone. It was the good days.
Man, oh, man.
The second five.
Bad.
The second five
Yeah,
years.
I love Bad stories seed. Like the condom thing where, I mean, some of the things I've heard are harrowing about your offices.
Yeah.
Like the cleanliness of it.
Oh, my God.
Well, we'd throw things up and break ceiling tiles.
Yeah.
And then you had all these.
And
in
people
this
would just come back
room.
And. Fix it, right?
Well,
Blotch and McCann were always like,
they'd throw food up there.
Why do we have, there's a mouse?
Right.
And then he'd throw food
at
the
where the mouse was. He'd be like, there's a mouse. Throw this leftover food at it.
And he would like shove pies.
I'll kill it with this hamburger.
Oh, God.
But in these holes in the ceiling, like they would just ball food up and whip it up into the hole. So there were, months of food
mice?
Up there.
Oh, God.
I think this is what I imagined.
It was disgusting.
When I thought about being a comedy writer, I envisioned like a room full of bean bags where everyone was just throwing Cheetos at each other. But then I started and it wasn't that. But it actually was at one point.
It was there. It was
me and Tommy Blotch and I shared an office. The music department used to get all these CDs, just, this is terrible, from bands that are trying to get on the show. And
they
all end up in just a bin. Like 90% of them were just like, maybe, I don't even know if they listened to them.
Right.
But there was a huge bin of just CDs.
And you and Tommy listened to all of them?
Oh, yeah. We gave it a fair shot. No, we would just take them.
Yes.
And we had like the way we had a couch in our office, and then the front door to our office would kind of open, but then it would stop against the arm of the couch, and it would form like this triangle of space between the wall, the door, and the arm of the couch. And then Blacha, we would just take these CDs and we would stand on one corner of the office and then whip them as hard as we could against the wall just for the joy of seeing it smash.
Right.
And it just, so they'd hit, shatter everywhere, but the bulk of it would just fall onto the ground. And we did this for years, and it was maybe 2 to 3 feet high of just shards of plastic CD, you know, CDs, the cases, and we just called it Bin CD Corner.
Oh. That's right. That is
it
fine.
Was a massive pile. It
and
was
didn't some
awful.
Of them like stick into the wall like a knife?
I mean, we were just destroying the wall.
Yeah.
The wall was all beat up. Mm-hmm. So there was jagged edges stuck
probably
in there.
Probably like leaching chemicals into the.
Oh my God. It was
We also had a bowling ball on the floor. For no one knows how it got, but so people would just pick the bowling ball up. Like if there was someone they didn't like on the floor below, they'd figure out where their office was and start throwing them.
Oh, I wish we had that now.
I know. You know what I think that one big difference is? One difference is you had three writers and two writers. Yeah, that's right. I hired bankers. No, but you had three people jammed into a room smaller than this, mm-hmm. and you kind
it's
of
dorm
just
room.
Would go crazy.
So now
I think it was just the people. We're all just like
everyone was
idiots
mental.
And obnoxious.
Yes,
and like to amuse ourselves.
Yes, and not write children's drawings.
Oh, Jesus,
it was like, what do I do? Write Al Roker children's drawing, or give me a new bin of CDs. You go for the CDs every time.
I remember, didn't I? I wore a shirt and I wrote "Extracting de Siemens." That was like one of those shitty SAT analogy punchlines.
Yes.
That was maybe the worst thing I think that I thought we ever did.
Extracting.
Yes. And that was a T-shirt.
That was an actual quote unquote joke.
Yes.
That made the show.
That was on an SAT analogy. Like blankety blank is to something that rhymes with Siemens as blankety blank is to extracting the Siemens. That was an actual fucking thing.
And now a T-shirt. And now a T-shirt.
Well, I wrote it on a shirt and wore it my last day. Or maybe I wore it and then took photos of everyone's desk and then sent
great.
It to you guys or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was a volume business.
That's exactly, yeah. I think Conan's thing was always like, it's the fuel that fuels the weird rocket ship.
Right, right.
You got to have the fuel.
Right.
And I was always like, no, you don't. Just have the fuel be weird.
Yeah.
But people ask me that all the time. Like, don't you worry about running out of ideas? Because it's every day. And you just don't because there's so many people there.
Right.
But it is volume.
I mean, not everyone has a great idea every day.
No.
Right.
And sometimes never.
It's nice to also not have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Sometimes never. Sometimes people have.
I'm speaking for myself.
Conan said there was a writer who came and said, you know what? I'm burned out. I want to leave. And then said, I've been burned out for 9 months. Like, just admitted, like, basically, I haven't been working for 9 months.
Yeah.
Here, you know, but there's a whole team. So you could maybe.
Yeah. You hopefully don't, your burnouts don't align so that you can kind of each take a burnout.
Right. Exactly.
Week.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it's like now, but the schedule was really great. You know, the built-in vacation schedule.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a fair amount of them from what I remember. And
they were spaced out. They were nicely spaced.
Yeah, you knew when they were coming. You could plan. And that was always pretty great.
Now there are even more weeks now.
Almost more vacation than work.
Exactly.
Wow, sounds good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What have I done? Maybe I'll come back.
Come on back.
You're welcome anytime.
We'll bring children's drawings back just for you.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, and we'll put in a good word for you for Conan's podcast, too.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it now.
No, yeah, I think you shouldn't.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
Pass.
I think you should pass. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
We're used to that.
So. You're not going to top this.
We are out of time.
We're out of time already.
Wow. We're
this is crazy.
I know. But you can come back anytime.
Yes. Anytime you want. Anytime you're in LA.
All right.
Yeah. Or, you know, sometimes we're in New York. We'll come
That's
out to
right.
Brooklyn. Build a studio.
That'd be great.
We'll
you could do some of your characters for us.
Characters in the park.
They could lead to bits.
Well, I hope we get to see your that live show at some point.
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
Sold out here, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, well.
But yeah, I hope, yeah, hopefully, I hope everyone gets to see it someday.
That's
what
I meant.
Yeah, no, I know.
And also Hustlers when the screeners come.
Yes, when the screener comes.
Jglay. J-G-L-A-Y. Let's get
that out there.
Okay. Get it trending on Twitter.
Let's do that.
Why don't you have a Twitter account? I just don't want to do it.
I just hate all social media is the worst.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on Instagram.
You're making phone calls.
It can be fun, but
you're
Twitter I just never joined.
You're old school.
I can't
That's
do
good.
It.
It's not good.
I can't do it.
I mean, in my opinion.
No, it's awful. If you can stay away, do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John.
John, really thanks nice for having me. This is great seeing you. Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was John Glazer.
It still was John Glazer the whole time.
And we...
Doing characters.
Yes. And next week, we're going to have a former head writer of The Conan Show.
Of Late Night.
Jonathan Groff.
Jonathan Groff. And when he shortens his
name... Is that a J-O-H-N?
It's J-O-N.
Oh, it is also J-O-N.
J-O-N.
Wow.
Yeah. John Groff will be here next week.
We're the only podcast bringing you these scoops.
Yep. This... Inside spelling of writers' names.
We'll see you next week with another J-O-N.
Bye-bye.
We like you. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Kevin Bartelt.
Engineered by Will Becton.
Mixed by Ryan Connor.
Supervising producer is Aaron Blaird.
Associate producer, Jen Samples. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross. Jeff Ross at Team Coco. And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
Ta-da!
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.